Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
Nope.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
Nope.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Nope.
This is a completely airtight kettle and mounted on the top of our car.
So I'm running for office, for Pete's sake. I can't have illegals.
Nope.
I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there.
Nope.
I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
Nope! He's white. He's unscented. He's boring. Put the no back in November with our Mitt Romney Nope on a Rope, Soap on a Rope. This and other awesome political stuff only from BubbleGenius.com.
We're Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Who let the dogs out? Who? Who?
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Good evening. I'm Will McAvoy. This is Monday, August 8th.
Tonight's top story is a woman named Dorothy Cooper.
Dorothy Cooper is a 96-year-old resident of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and has been voting for the last 75 years. This year, she's been told she can't. A new law in Tennessee requires residents to show a government-issued photo ID in order to vote. Dorothy Cooper doesn't have a driver's license because Dorothy Cooper doesn't have a car. Dorothy Cooper doesn't have a passport. A vacation abroad was never in her future.
Tennessee isn't alone. At this moment, 33 states have proposed or already adopted the same voter ID laws that have disqualified Dorothy Cooper from the one fundamental thing that we all do as Americans.
It's estimated that 11%, or roughly 20 million people, don't have government-issued voter IDs and will be disenfranchised this November. Why?
To crack down on the terrible problem of voter fraud.
Well, fuck.
Because voter fraud is such a huge problem that during a five-year period under the Bush administration, when 196 million votes were cast,
the number of cases of voter fraud reached 86. Not 86,000, 86.
0.04%. This would be called a solution without a problem, but it's not. It's just a solution to a different problem.
Republicans have a hard time getting certain people to vote for them, so life would be a lot easier if certain people just weren't allowed to vote at all.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, we can't get fooled again.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, August 30th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez, brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Where the hell do we begin today? I don't know where to start, honestly.
Let's just go home.
Let's just talk about food and our favorite shows. No, we're going to be doing that on the after party. But, I mean, when there's a speech like there was last night, it's difficult to know, and I think this is part of the point of delivering a speech like this. When you're in the business of commentating or covering from a liberal point of view, conservative speeches, conservative campaigns, conservative legislation, I think part of what they do is to find ways to get us so flummoxed that we don't even know where to start. We don't even know how to start to peel back this onion.
Well, that's the idea. Okay. They keep the duplicity and utter crap coming. It's such a massive volume that the fact checkers just lose track, and after a while, everybody just gives up.
Yeah. And it was a long...
Which, I say that as if anybody's actually trying, and at least within the mainstream media. They don't care. They gave up from the very beginning.
Well, the good news is actually, at least from what I've been seeing, the traditional press has actually been talking about this quite a bit. I mean, they've been kind of obfuscating and using kind of sort of weird, like the AP used something to the effect of, Ryan stretches honesty or, something that skated around the word lie.
Yeah, because they are genetically predisposed to never, ever being able to say the word lie.
Yeah.
Nobody ever lies.
No.
Because lying shows forethought and malice. Well, and they're never willing to admit that a potential political leader or a political leader is operating with forethought and malice.
Well, see, here's the problem. For as long as politics have been around, politicians have always exaggerated. Politicians have, to a certain degree, always thrown in a lie here or there. But it's typically noticeable. It's typically, in the vein of being innocuous. It's not a huge deal. The sort of things like, I'm not a crook, which we know. Well, yeah, he's full of
crap. No, that was
kind
of a huge deal, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But it's never couched in an ongoing...
When it comes to covering your own ass, they'll say anything.
Yeah, yeah. But it's never couched in this ongoing syllabus. It's like this... it's like this universe of lies where you just don't even know. It's like your senses are bombarded by just the ongoing bashing over the head of one lie after another. So no sooner have you started to debunk and get outraged and point out and try to fact check one thing, they're on to the next thing. So then you
watching one of the Jackass movies is to laughter. The Republican convention is to lying. You just can't keep up. You're too busy. You're too busy processing one thing. Whereas if it were a Jackass movie, you'd be laughing and you'd miss something like an old Mel Brooks movie. Same thing.
Yeah, that's right. No sooner has Johnny Knoxville run his face into a road sign, but then Ryan Dunn is sticking a toy car up his butt.
You still haven't recovered from that, exactly. But no, Charles Pierce, it's funny, I put this up today and I just saw it. It's actually from like a day and a half ago. But Charles Pierce had what I think is honestly the single best one sentence about the entire convention. Mm-hmm. And it's the Republican Party has set out at its 2012 convention in search of the event horizon of utter b***h.
Yeah, I mean, and they really have. I mean, what they've done is, and I think this is an offshoot of Karl Rove-style politics. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. They've decided to throw away all pretense of honesty.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that's what makes it so jaw-dropping. I mean, I think that's what you were talking about a minute ago. That's what sort of sticks in my head is what's so shocking about it, what's so blatantly, I love everybody, using sort of, going through the thesaurus trying to find the right word, brazen, blatant, audacious is one I've used, shameless over and over, mm-hmm. is that it is, these lies are so jaw-dropping because they can so easily be proven or disproved, depending on what they're talking about. And it takes one mouse click. Yeah. And that's all, I mean, and it goes back to the fact that I know you've talked about this. I mean, this is once again, it's jaw-dropping, the idea that the entire convention, that entire we built this crap, that's a lie. The entire convention is based on a lie.
Yeah,
it's based on absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it's an Andrew Breitbart Memorial Convention. Because what it is, it's a convention based around a theme that is drawn from a selectively edited video. And that
it's a faulty premise from the word go.
And that was Andrew Breitbart's chief thing. I mean, that was what he was all about, selectively editing video and wagging his finger at the selectively edited video as if it was some sort of outrage wherein he actually just manufactured the video.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, this is what the entire campaign is about, the entire convention.
And it's funny because I have, I have people on Facebook, one or two people I know who, jump in every once in a while from the right. And a lot of them, they really do. I've been watching and they've really been pushing this. The president said you didn't build that. I mean, over and over. And every time they jump in, I'm just like, I won't take anything. You're a smart person and I know you want to debate civilly and that's fine. That's really cool. I have no issue with that. But I can't take you the least bit seriously as long as you believe, as long as you're willing to tout that. You're taking that out of context, which is absolute nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I just kept looking at what was going on last night and looking at the last couple of days and going, how are they – and this is this is not being idealistic. This is actually being completely realistic. How can they, how can Paul Ryan stand up there on that dais behind that podium and lie after lie after lie after lie and then point to his mother in the audience and say, that's my role model, Mom. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
he taught me well. I mean, at some point, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I have built a campaign on a pile of bullshit. And yeah. that's precisely what it is. Now, I realize here at this point that by the time this podcast gets out and around and people start to listen to it, we will have already had the Romney speech, which is coming up tonight. And some people might already be into the Democratic convention by the time they hear this podcast. But it's just so important because the Paul Ryan speech last night so perfectly illustrated everything we've been saying about the Republican Party, everything about their motives, everything about their mendacity. I mean, look at it.
If Paul Ryan weren't running for office, you would call him a sociopath. If he didn't have that sort of impetus to be lying out his ass, you'd call him a sociopath.
Well, look at the "we built this" theme again. Let's go back to that for a second. And let's go back to the idea of barely being able to catch up with the ongoing cavalcade of lies, right?
We built this city!
I just had to throw that in there. They featured a series of small business owners, or large business, I don't know what the size business, but business owners up there to deliver speeches to the delegates interspersed between the politicians. And no sooner do you see one, you know, speaker up there, one business owner who received $200,000 in stimulus money. But then there's another guy who was actually a government contractor making signs. And then there's a guy in a commercial who received government loans and grants. And then there's another guy who received government loans. And then, there's another one. He received all kinds of stimulus money. And we're to sit there and believe that these people are actually honest, or at least attempting to have the pretense of honesty and wanting to rule the country based upon that. I mean, what kind of character do these people really have? We're going to play a clip later on the show of the Bushes, the both of the George Bushes. And there's going to be, it's going to, one of them is kind of, oh, they're both kind of silly. I'll just call a spade a spade. They're both silly. And one of them actually highlights something that we kind of forget, and we'll get to that later on in the show. But I get the sense a lot of this show is going to be about Paul Ryan's speech. I mean, I definitely want to talk about, there's something that Lindsey Graham said today that we need to talk about.
That was beautiful stuff.
Unbelievable. There's Chuck Todd. It said something so utterly outrageous. I had to read it twice to make sure that I was reading the correct quote. Plus, I want to talk a little bit about Scott Walker and voter ID, voter registration. So we're going to do all of that on the show. But, I mean, primarily it's got to be Paul Ryan. Now, the fact checkers did a really strong job going through, as well as some of the networks relating these things, at least from what I saw. Now, I will admit that I primarily watch MSNBC. I didn't see a lot of CNN, so I don't know how often they went back to these. I mean, there was sort of a big five lies, and these were all the main criticisms of the president. All the big chunks of Paul Ryan's speech were all lies. I mean, they were all based around lies, and the fact checkers got, I think, all five of these. Plus, there were additional ones that were misleading or misrepresenting the facts and just all kinds of weasel words. And
yeah.
God, I mean, it was really hard to actually live tweet this yesterday because, you just couldn't keep up. You simply couldn't keep up with it. So, I mean, first of all, you had the Medicare lie, which we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. I mean, this is something they built an ad campaign around. The idea that the president, you know, cut $700 billion out of Medicare, you know, screwing senior citizens left and right and using that to pay for Obamacare. Right. When, in fact, what we know, and, you know, I'm not breaking any news here. We've talked about this before. First of all, Paul Ryan calls for the same cuts in his Medicare plan. In addition to that, it wasn't actually, they're not cuts to benefits. They're not cuts to anything that will in any way affect senior citizens or future beneficiaries of Medicare. people who are not even retired yet. It's not going to hurt you. In fact, it's probably going to help you because it's going to make Medicare more solvent. It's going to make Medicare Advantage more affordable. So what it does is it actually levels the playing field, levels the payouts. Medicare Advantage was paying out much more to private insurers than what Medicare proper was providing. So what they did is they just leveled that playing field. So they're not paying private insurance companies, $1.50 on the dollar for the same care that Medicare proper is providing. So there was that, right? Plus, they reduced payments out to hospitals, which the hospital organizations actually approved. They sanctioned this. They welcomed it because the Affordable Care Act would be providing hospitals with more. And we kind of chuckled about this last week with more customers.
Right.
Mainly more people who are insured and who could actually pay their bill once they are better and can leave. So that's what the $700 billion is. But they just are so wrapped up in this lie. And it's not even just a lie. It's, in fact, what they're saying is exactly the opposite of anything that's close to reality.
Right.
So then there was the Simpson Bowles thing, which I've heard a lot about today. I mean, really, I think a lot of the press has latched onto the Simpson Bowles lie more than anything else.
I did see that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, which is that was the Bipartisan Deficit Commission. And Paul Ryan said the president did nothing about the Bipartisan Deficit Commission, otherwise known as Simpson Bowles, when in fact Ryan himself helped to kill the Simpson Bowles Commission. Just killed didn't vote for the recommendation. So that went away. Because you know why? Because Ryan wanted his own budget in there. It was like my way or the highway, so screw all of you. Then he said that the American people are cut out of the stimulus package. Like, no one got any stimulus money. The people didn't get anything. When, in fact, most of the stimulus was, in fact, tax relief for middle-class workers.
Yeah.
Tax cuts. It's just staggering. Here's the president trying to play ball with the Republicans, give the Republicans something big and meaty that they could take home and tell their constituents that they voted for. Big-time middle-class tax cuts. Here you go. Here you go, Republicans. Something for you to get behind in this stimulus package. We gotta get together and save the economy here because it's about to crash and burn. And so he does it. And then they not only say he did a bad thing, that the stimulus is this horrible thing, but they actually said he didn't do it. I mean, he didn't pass, most of the stimulus as tax relief. Actually, I'm saying here, it's at least 25% of all stimulus dollars went to tax relief for workers. That's from factcheck.org. I'm getting all of this from factcheck.org, the nonpartisan factcheck.org. Lest you any conservative trolls think I'm getting this from, the Huffington Post or some other obviously biased organization. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more of this right after this.
Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Some Rage Against the Machine for Paul Ryan. I thought it was hilarious. Is there Mike Huckabee talking about working with Bono? The closest anyone from U2 will get to a Republican convention is a mention by Mike Huckabee. Because I don't think they would even allow their music to be played at the convention. And so neither would Rage Against the Machine, of course. And that was...
But of course,
yeah, and
it is always fun to see as this sort of new what you have to assume is the new generation of Republicans, the Paul Ryans of the world, attempt to sort of be cool.
Yeah,
and I said it a while back. Republicans are not cool. And by the way, I'm not saying that cool is all that important. I'm genuinely not, because I think in the thing that I wrote, I also said Democrats for a long time have put too high a price on cool, to where they sometimes come off as sort of, you know, the cool kids club, the kind of like condescending assholes.
Yeah.
But no, whenever Republicans attempt to sort of co-opt pop culture, it just winds up looking awful.
Yeah, it really does. And
the best part about it is you get that wonderful moment where whoever it is they're trying to co-opt, whether it's, you know, a movie star or certainly when it comes to music, 9 times out of 10, that person, that band just comes and smacks them in the mouth and says, I want nothing to do with you.
I know. And it really, and this is something I'm always thinking about. It's really got to be hard to be a Republican, because you look around and you're surrounded. I mean, the music that you like, the actors and the actresses who you like to watch, the filmmakers, everything with pop culture, basically, minus some of the reality shows on TLC, of course, their politics are just completely opposite of yours. And so, mm-hmm. therefore, it's just got to be rough. It's got to be rough to know, oh, my God, this is my favorite band, Rage Against the Machine. And then you read in the paper that they just hate you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Paul Ryan's like, oh, my favorite band, Rage Against the Machine. And then Tom Morello comes out and says, nah, we're raging against you, Paul Ryan. That's the machine we're raging against. What was great about that, too, is you had just written that Gen X piece about Paul Ryan. And it was like that same day. It was totally prescient, because it was that same day that he came out and just completely smacked down Paul Ryan for mentioning Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, that's true. That was I wrote that before Morello came back. And, you know, and I say this as somebody, by the way, I think I said in the piece, I don't like Rage Against the Machine. I mean, musically they're all right, but I hate to say that I actually kind of agree with Paul Ryan on this. Musically they're cool, but the Zach's completely left-wing politics and his anger over it always used to kind of irritate the crap out of me. It was great in small doses.
Yeah. Well,
my attitude when it came to Zach was always, if you're pissed off about anything, you should be angry at God for making you that ugly.
So in his speech last night, Paul Ryan mentioned his iTunes playlist.
No, did not see. I think I heard something about like AC/DC and Zeppelin.
Yeah, he said his his iTunes playlist covered everything from AC/DC to, and he said, Led Zeppelin. So yeah, led Dave Weigel to tweet. He said, I guess Paul Ryan's playlist only goes to L.
It goes to L, right. It stops at L. That's great.
It stops at L. But, I mean, this is like lame bands to quote, because there's no choice, really, right?
Well, I mean, it's funny because watching him sort of attempt to ingratiate himself to really a form of music which, you know, look, AC/DC and Zeppelin are considered tame now, but there was a time when, you know, I used to watch right wingers on TV play records backwards and talk about how Zeppelin was going to take over take over your children's minds, and AC/DC, you know, was Highway to Hell and all, you know. I mean, there was a time when the people who sort of controlled the Republican Party, just, you know, the moral majority types, just ran scared from that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, and it was also
a Republican will be able to say, you know, by the way, huge fan of Marilyn Manson.
That'd be great. And then he also made sure to mention Mitt Romney's musical taste being that of elevator music, which wasn't shocking or surprising. No, I didn't even really look at Mitt Romney as some guy who kind of listens to music at all. Like, he's just like not a music guy.
No.
Because it requires rhythm and some sort of connection to sort of the left brain.
Yeah. No, he's not. Again, this is one of those things I get choked up about. I get choked up because you and I have discussed this a bunch of times, and I've written it on my blog a bunch of times. I can't, when it comes to describing what the hell is so weird and wrong with Mitt Romney, I can't do it. I can't begin to put into words that Jeff Bridges in Starman quality that just makes him utterly fucking bizarre.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges in Dutch apple pie.
Yeah, it's just true. He's just utterly bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is. And we're going to get a mighty dose of that tonight. And you know what's weird is during Ann Romney's speech, they put Mitt Romney out in the crowd. And then the camera kept going back to him.
Which sure, why is just, not?
I mean, so talk about awkward. I mean, you have a guy who's very uncomfortable in his own skin and just is really sort of unhuman in his mannerisms and his reaction to things. And they stick him in the crowd. Not only is it awkward, but it also is weird from the perspective of, you don't put the headlining band like out with the opening act. and sort of spoil the, you know, the surprise and the impact of seeing the, you know, the headliner for the first time when the, you know, the big curtain goes down and the explosions go up and they hit that, those first chords. I mean, that's, it was just strange sort of optics to put Mitt Romney in the crowd before he's even spoken yet. It's like, didn't they send John McCain out with Sarah Palin after Palin's speech 4 years ago?
Can't remember.
Hey, just, oh, these Republicans, they don't understand stagecraft.
You should probably know, by the way, that I've watched almost none of the convention.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My mother has this thing where she refuses to watch violent R-rated movies, no matter what they are, no matter how good they are or how good I tell her they are. And when I ask her about it, she'll always say something to the effect of, you know, why should I watch something that will upset and disgust me?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about the Republican National Convention. It's just going to upset and disgust me.
Well, you know, for me, it's kind of part of my job. It's kind of, you know, this is the sort of thing that I kind of dig.
And I say that as somebody who's gone back and watched clips, you know, watch clips of Ryan, obviously, so I know what I'm talking about when I write about it, that kind of thing.
But yeah, yeah.
I mean, to sit and watch, to sit and actually, okay, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch this unfold. Mm-hmm. No, I can't.
Well, it's good for me. It's almost like watching, and we talked about this on the show a whole lot, is that I kind of like listening to right wing talk radio because it's like a glimpse into the enemy camp. It's like you're spying on what their messages are, and you assume, or they assume at least, that, you know, the liberals aren't watching, so we can say whatever the hell we want. And so that's you get kind of this weird fly in the wall point of view in terms of what they're saying, what their strategy is, what their talking points are, the lies they're spreading around out there. So in the process of trying to set the record straight or to counterattack and blah, 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 it's kind of educational to check that out. And so, and plus I dig the idea of big national conventions with all the hoopla and everything like that, because it's American politics and that's sort of what I do. But I get back to a couple more of these Paul Ryan.
I watched Casablanca last night.
What's that you did?
I watched Casablanca on Turner Classic Movies while Ryan was speaking.
That's a great combination. That's like chocolate cake and grapefruit.
Right. No, I mean, not like while he was like I flipped back and forth, meaning I read some of the tweets that were coming down on while he was talking, that kind of thing, and I just sat and watched Casablanca.
I just a brief bit of news, just completely off the topic. I just saw this come down on Twitter that the president wants to consider mobilizing a constitutional amendment process to overturn Citizens United. How about that? This will be the first time, I think, since the Equal Rights Amendment that the Democrats have actually pushed for some form of constitutional amendment.
Mm.
And I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I can't remember the last time the Democrats really pushed for an amendment on something. But this would seem to make sense. I wonder the process. I wonder if you can get 2/3 majority on anything anymore.
Probably not.
But anyway, so we're going to get back to a couple more fact checking things from Paul Ryan's speech and probably in the next segment. But, you know, this will be fascinating because I think it's just a matter of because I can't imagine rank and file Republicans. And I'm not talking about Republican politicians, but I'm talking about Republican voters who are at all excited about the idea of super PACs. Or the whole idea of unfettered corporate money. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Paul Ryan's speech last night, Paul Ryan actually criticized the idea of corporate welfare. Of course, he couched it in the concept of corporate welfare being in the stimulus, right? Suddenly, the Republicans hate corporate welfare. But I think there's a possibility this sort of thing could happen. So we'll watch for that. But we're going to take another quick break for Bubble Genius, and we'll be back right after this. The show is brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. It's the only place to get your bath and body products online. And if you're a self-respecting liberal, even a self-respecting vegan, you ought to be buying all your stuff from Bubble Genius. It smells great. They've got a massive variety of soaps and bath and body products so you can pick and choose from. Some of them are funny, some of them are serious, some of them are just damn good. And they're all vegan, and they're distributed by a couple of women who hand make all of their stuff in the Bubble Genius Lab. And they're liberal, and they sponsored this show, so that should be enough for you. Here now is the latest word from BubbleGenius.com.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
Nope.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
Nope.
Corporations are people, my friend.
Nope.
This is a completely airtight kettle and mounted on the top of our car.
So I'm running for office, for Pete's sake. I can't have illegals.
Nope.
I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there.
Nope.
I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
Nope!
He's white. He's unscented. He's boring. Put the no back in November with our Mitt Romney Nope on a Rope, Soap on a Rope. This and other awesome political stuff only from BubbleGenius.com. We're Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Who let the dogs out? Who?
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Hey, if you listen on WPWC, We Act Radio, 1480 AM in Washington, D.C., you can get the show a couple of days earlier by subscribing on iTunes or going to BobSeska.com or DeusExMalcontent.com and just downloading the show right on your computer or onto your handheld device. So, and also, by the way, if you're going to BubbleGenius.com,
I can download it onto my penis.
On your penis, yeah. Make sure to enter your promo code if you're going to do that. Bob and Chez, BobAndChez, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. All right, so we've got we've covered three things already. There's still like just a pile more of fact check things from Paul Ryan's speech. Now, you may, by this point in time, you may have already read about this stuff. You may have already heard it on television or seen it on Twitter or whatever. But look, this is material that we need to be repeating, setting the record straight as often as possible to break through this noise machine of crap that's being delivered by the Romney-Ryan campaign. I mean, brazenly. I mean, you occasionally had things. I remember 4 years ago, there was like one thing, I think, that was really beyond, just totally beyond any sort of reasonable expectation, which was Sarah Palin's pals around with domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
But then beyond that, there were just a lot of little stupid jabs, like the Greek columns thing. You know, it's just like, or teleprompters. It was like all little, other little kind of just silly bumper sticker things. I don't remember from 4 years ago there just being this huge, huge ongoing campaign of lies where it's just one week after another, one day after another, commercial after commercial, talking point, speech after speech. It's just ongoing.
Well, and I think the reason for that is obvious. They will do... And I know you can. It's easy to go to sort of the racial thing. I think of it in terms a little bit broader than that. I think it has to do with race, xenophobia, otherness, just general sort of unease. But I don't think the Republicans have ever wanted a president out of office so badly. Yeah. I mean, they hated Clinton, man. They hated his guts, and I can't even. The way they felt about him rates a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10, and Obama rating a 10.
Well, it's even if you put race aside, and I do think there is a strong racial component in all of this.
I think there is a racial component to it also, but again, I think it's more than just that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what it is to a certain extent, I believe the Republicans are terrified that liberal economic policies are actually going to succeed again, because that's what they have been doing for decades after decades in America. Liberal economic policies have always succeeded. Conservative economic policies, you cannot find me a single example in American government and the history of the United States that a massive tax cut for the rich helped to recover the economy in a deep recession. It just never happened. I don't think you can even find that example anywhere in world history. I mean, it's not even
working. But what about St. Reagan?
St. Reagan actually raised taxes. The first thing he did, right into a recession. 1982, the largest tax increase in, 30 years, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan realized that, he's going to rack up huge, huge deficits and debt, and he needs to make revenue somehow. So he ended up raising taxes, 5 or 7 times. I'm not sure exactly what the number is, throughout his 2 terms. And it was the biggest one, 1982. Ronald Reagan signed his name to something that actually had the word tax in it. I mean, in the title. These guys, they refuse to acknowledge the fact that conservative economic policy is fiction. It's Ayn Rand fiction. And liberal economic policy, Keynesian economics, tends to successfully extricate the economy out of a recession.
From a wonky standpoint, that's what they're concerned about. They're concerned that the policies will work. From a superficial optics standpoint, what they're concerned about is that the rise of, this is something I think both of us have probably been, I know I've been writing about this since pretty much the beginning of the Obama presidency and when everybody lost their minds. Obama's ascension is a stark reminder of the fact that, yes, they are, the sort of white Christian male privilege that they've enjoyed is kind of coming to an end. Yeah. That they are losing what really was never their country, but they're losing the sort of old school is going away.
They're concerned about, another economic crisis being fixed by liberal economic policy. And then the Republicans are sent out to pasture as a result, because their ideas clearly don't function.
Again, and that brings together both the wonky and the superficial thing that I talked about, because, it puts them out to pasture in a very real sense when it comes to their policy. And they already know, which Lindsey Graham all but admitted, which we've talked about over and over again, that they're being demographically phased out.
Right.
They're being demographically pushed into extinction unless they change, unless they, evolve or die.
That's right. We'll get to that in a few minutes. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, I'm doing this to taunt Paul Ryan. I'm just playing some Rage Against the Machine here.
At least you could have done is play some AC/DC.
Last segment of the show this week.
AC/DC, Bon Scott era AC/DC.
Yeah, I want to get to these last couple of Paul Ryan fact check things, and then move on to Lindsey Graham, because that's, God, does that play into everything we've been talking about for months?
Yeah, that's like I said, he must be a recovering alcoholic, because that's what 12 steppers call the moment of clarity.
Paul Ryan faulted the president for failing to deliver a 2008 campaign promise to keep a Wisconsin GM plant open. It closed less than a month before Obama actually took office. So the criticism was, president stands out there during a campaign at this place in Wisconsin, his GM car plant, and says, I'm going to work to keep this plant open. Well, by the time he was inaugurated, it's too late, because under George W. Bush, and because of the economy, GM closed the plant, just shut it down, fired all the workers. So what's the president supposed to do, Paul Ryan? Go into the White House, sign a bill that says, all right, I'm going to give government money to GM so they can open this plant. What do you expect him to do, Paul Ryan, in order to keep this plant open? What's the policy? A tax cut for GM? Yeah, here's a tax cut, GM. Why don't you go open that plant? Well, you think they're really going to open that plant? What chain of evidence leads you to believe that a tax cut is going to lead to the opening of a plant? The plant's already been closed. The plant was closed in December 2008. That was a massive, massive lie. This is one that they've been telling over and over again as well. This is nothing new. So everyone's prepared for it. I mean, that's what kind of made the fact checker job easier.
You're operating under the you're working off of the faulty premise that there's anything at all that Obama could do that would make them happy, that would make them go, okay, that's the right thing to do.
No, it's right, because what we've been talking about for many, many months now is that they're doing just the opposite of whatever the president does. Yeah. So, I mean, what was criticized last night? I mean, a number of speakers on the dais yesterday and the day before were saying that there's no Republican ideas in the Affordable Care Act. Oh, yeah, except for the individual mandate, the one you people hate now. Good Lord. But this is the process. The president bends over backwards to reach across the aisle, include Republican ideas and things like tax cuts and the stimulus, the individual mandate and the health care reform legislation. And what do? They turn around and they oppose him on it. So there's nothing. So, I mean, he stood up in front of the nation right after he was inaugurated, said within my first term, I'm going to cut the deficit in half. And you know what? He's cut the deficit by, as of right now, $300 billion. By the end of 2013, it's going to be down to $900 billion. And that's another $200 billion. And he will have cut it in half at some point in the next couple of years. Let's say the next 3 years, the deficit will be cut in half. President is allowed to stay in office. So he didn't actually do that. But why didn't he do it? Well, it's part of it is because Paul Ryan voted against Simpson-Bowles. I mean, these are all the things that the meta nature of all of it is almost mind-boggling. I mean, it really makes your head kind of, you know, your brain kind of ooze out of your ears.
Well, that's the idea, to be so over the top and so audacious that really it flummoxes everybody.
Yeah. But then, I mean, the overall theme, and this was hammered home by Paul Ryan last night, was, you know, the overall theme of the campaign, in addition to we built it, is we hate the debt. We hate deficit. We hate government spending. Meanwhile, Paul Ryan has voted for all of these policies that created the current deficits and the current debt. Paul Ryan put his vote on the floor of Congress on everything. Bush tax cuts, the wars, the policies that led to the recession, the TARP, right? The Bush bailout. All of that was supported by Paul Ryan. And all of that is being stacked up onto the debt, right? And naturally, he's not going to mention all of the different things that the president has actually done to cut spending, much to our chagrin, in terms of him, he really should be spending more to help the recovery. But in the context of the Republican attack, I mean, Ronald Reagan increased the debt by 188% in his 8 years. I think in his 4 years, Bush 41 increased the debt by, I want to say it's 56%. I might be wrong on that. It's in the 50s. Barack Obama's only increased the debt by 41% so far. And he's actually, it's going to probably hover around that because the year-over-year increase has gone from 15% to 4%. So it's barely going up now. In fact, sometimes you go look at the debt clock. Sometimes it'll roll backwards. So go look at that debt clock. I doubt the one in the arena in Tampa is actually going to roll backwards. But if you look at the debt clock online, sometimes it rolls backwards. But none of this is going to get mentioned. Of course. Of course. Of course. They're not going to be that honest. But Lindsey Graham was honest, Chaz.
Extremely. Yeah. Uncharacteristically.
And some would say accidentally. And I don't know, sometimes these guys just blurt stuff out. And I think they forget that there's YouTube and cameras and reporters and the internet. Because here's Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham talking about the Republican voters and the Republican demographic. He said, "We're not generating enough angry white guys to stay in business for the long term." We meaning the Republican Party.
Yep.
The Republican Party needs more angry white guys. And they're just not...
I love the idea that they are actually generating them. I think they're actually doing a damn good job of generating them.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, if you consider that...
If not generating them, then stoking them.
Half of broadcast radio is busily doing that now. I mean, it's like a hive.
A true moment of clarity, a true moment of honesty. Yeah. And that's their entire, I mean, right in that one, you know, right in that one line, there is a truth, which is that their brand is going to go extinct, mm-hmm. going to become extinct.
Yeah.
And that the only way it can survive is to generate more animosity and resentment.
Yeah.
Or white animosity.
So I think this might have been a response to the notion that perhaps they ought to be reaching out and gathering minority voters.
I think that's what he was getting at, even though it was kind of inartfully, although humorously put. I think his point was kind of the same thing that Jeb Bush said. And, you know, look, I'm not a big fan of Lindsey Graham, not a big fan of Jeb Bush, but I at least, you know, everything, as I said when I mentioned Jeb Bush's comment on the blog earlier this week, at least, you know, everything at this point is relative. And when a Republican expresses a somewhat sane point of view, even if that person has done things I don't particularly, you know, like in the past, they get credit. It's become so crazy that, you know, if you talk like a sensible human being, even for a couple of minutes, I'm like, oh, thank you. Jeb Bush said the same thing, that they need at some point to stop sort of demonizing this up and coming, not even up and coming, this ascending voting bloc. Otherwise, it's going to kill them.
Yeah. So consequently, I think what we saw or what we've seen the last couple of days, and I'm unsure, I haven't seen any of the convention yet today, Thursday, but we've seen a lot of Latinos being represented at the Republican convention.
Yes.
But not so many that Chuck Todd, with this next quote, would be anywhere near close to any sort of reality. Chuck Todd on Morning Joe this morning said, by the way, Democrats wish they had the diversity of speakers and deep bench to show America.
What?
Chuck Todd said, by the way, Democrats wish they had the diversity of speakers and deep bench to show America.
This show airs in the Beltway, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what Morning Joe is.
No, but I'm saying this show, the show we're doing right now.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just if by some miracle of God, you know, my miracle of God, he's listening or it gets to him somehow. Chuck Todd, you are a f***ing idiot. really are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just wrong. It's wrong.
I'm not even going to accuse you of I'm not going to say he's shilling or anything like that. That's just a dumb thing to say because it's absolutely not true.
Well, he's, you know, what they do is they build up a cache of things that they say that are pro-Republican, and this way they can get a little bit of access, and then when they criticize Republicans, they would say, well, look what I said the other day. I said, you guys are more diverse than the Democrats. And so the Republicans, oh, okay, I guess he's one of the fair-minded liberals.
You know, you started, one of the things that I wrote this week is that we are so in desperate, wrote for Daily Banter, in such desperate need, love the show or hate it, and I have my moments of loving it and hating it both. The clip you played at the top of the show from the newsroom, uh-huh. I wish to God there were a news network that actually did that, that really sort of held everyone's feet to the fire equally and based itself solely on facts and didn't back down. And if somebody came on their show or on their broadcast and said, you know, something that was demonstrably not true, they would correct that person. And if that person said it again, they would dub that person a liar.
Yeah.
Having known better. I mean, just it would be so nice. It really would. If somebody didn't worry about access and it just, you know, you just got an honest to God news broadcast.
What you want is someone who both Republicans and Democrats can look to and say, okay, this guy is a fair player. And, but that's not, I don't think that, I don't know who could ever possibly fill that role.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I think that we're far too divided at this point.
But something leads me to believe that I think, going after, conservatives, I mean, you can get the sort of the David Frums of the world, maybe Jeb Bush in there too. But you're not going to get the crowd of people who are cheering on Paul Ryan last night. You're just not going to get them because they just completely distrust anyone who has any sort of grasp of reality. So as I'm like fact checking all that stuff on Twitter yesterday as Paul Ryan's delivering that speech, I'm getting trolls and Republicans and conservatives all over my Twitter feed saying, oh, what the hell are you talking about? He is telling the truth. Nah, not listening.
Yeah. Well, my favorite headline was, you know, because again, it just revels in its ignorance. There's just no other way to put it. Was that idiot John Nolte over at Breitbart?
Yeah.
Who Nolte has proven himself time and time again to be a dunce of the highest order. Mm-hmm. And the piece that he wrote was called like the era of media fact checkers intimidating Republicans is over. Which may as well honestly say, you know what, again, we're not letting the facts get in the way of anything. Yeah. We're not going to be intimidated by the facts. I mean, because again, as far as the interesting thing is what they're giving up by that. It's that old Colbert bit about how reality has a well-known liberal bias. Mm-hmm. Essentially what you're saying is if all the fact checkers are coming back and saying what Ryan said is a bunch of crap, they can't all be in the tank for Obama.
Yeah.
What it's got to tell you, if you have a brain that kind of works, is that maybe actually they're, you know, it's not a giant liberal media conspiracy against you. Maybe your guy's actually full of crap. Maybe he's actually saying things that aren't true.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to believe it. They don't. And then what's going to end up happening is I tweeted about this earlier today. What's going to end up happening is the press is going to bend over backwards next week to find an equal number of things to fact check about Joe Biden's speech and about the president's speech. And it's all going to be even Steven at the end of the day. And everyone's going to go back to their camps and say, well, I guess everybody's a liar, or I guess they're just as much of a liar as we are. So it's all level ground. And
everybody's a liar, and or everyone gets to go back to their, go back to their corner safe in the knowledge that they won.
Exactly. Exactly.
That they came out on top.
So let's we got a couple of seconds left on the show. I want to just play these couple of George Bush clips. These are George W., but there was a video that was featuring George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush at the convention. This is the closest that either of them got to the convention.
You know,
two Republicans who served as president for a total of 12 years, and they weren't even invited. This is a Mitt Romney fever catch-it moment from George W. Bush. This is George W. Bush's most positive sentence about Mitt Romney.
Dad and
most
I both positive. Know what it takes to be president. And there's no doubt in our mind that Mitt Romney will be a great president.
He's a good man.
And I hope that all the people at the convention work really, really hard, because I think the Romneys are prepared. I think Ann Romney will be great. And I think Mitt Romney will do a fabulous job.
That's right. And that's the common theme throughout the entire convention about Romney. He'll be great. Trust us. Trust us. I can't really describe. I can't encapsulate why in a sentence.
You're absolutely right. There is no vision there. Yeah. There's nothing about him personally that people warm to. You know, there's nothing. There's no sense of inner heroism or anything like that. I mean, there's nothing about him. You know, Matt Taibbi wrote a brilliant piece in Rolling Stone, in the new Rolling Stone, where he basically picked apart the fact that Romney created a crapload of debt. During his time at Bain, and he basically stuck, you know, not just taxpayers, but I mean small businesses with it. But it's interesting because I reprinted this in the blog, and it's funny because for all of the great little facts and figures that he throws out there, I actually really like the sort of way that he wrapped it all up. And he said, you know, Romney is part of a new generation of people that really come from nowhere. You know, Americans like their politicians to seem like they're American, and Romney actually doesn't. He's lived all over America. And he's, you know, obviously did missionary stuff in France, but he doesn't. It's as if none of it stuck with him, because really he lives in a sort of self-created, self-imposed, as Taibbi put it, an archipelago of, you know, tons of money, and that's it. You know, a privilege.
That's right. There's a psychological walling off,
psychological removal,
from
where everyone else is.
Precisely, and that I think that comes part and parcel of existing in the corporate world, where you have to make decisions. Oh, we talked about this over and over again, but it actually feeds into what Taibbi was writing about. You have to make decisions that negatively impact not only your workers, but other people, you know, people whose businesses you're taking over, maybe some environmental impact with some of the more dubious chemical-based businesses. You know, you have to turn your conscience off as a corporate CEO. Otherwise, if you let your conscience get in your way, you can't do your job. You can't, you know, profits and conscience really kind of are mutually exclusive.
So he's the equivalent of a contract killer.
Yeah, precisely. So I think that's where Mitt Romney's coming from. This is what allows him to lie as often as he does. This is what allows him to flip-flop on so many different things. Because he doesn't, there's not a Jiminy Cricket inside his head going, well, Mitt, you really shouldn't say this because, you know what, it's bad form, you know, it just shows a lack of character. He doesn't care. The end result is the victory and nothing else matters. So, hey, we got an after party on Friday. Make sure to tune in for that. We got a couple of extra, whoops, loud music. Got a couple of extra things from this show that'll bleed over onto the after party. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Enjoy Mitt Romney's speech tonight, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Yeah.